Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Welcome, everyone, to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast here on the Nerd Party Network. I'm Philip Gilfus, joined by my two co-hosts, par usual, Daniel Prue and Darren Moser. Gentlemen, how is your Star Trek week going?
Pretty good. It's been a nice... We're rolling into, what, June here?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Change that calendar, you know, whatever Star Trek calendar you have. Which I actually don't have one. What I do is I just have my my desk side here on my podcast station here that I revolve every month. Actually, I don't know what I'm going to do next for tomorrow or next month. Right now I have my Voyager bridge set up with Janeway, Chakotay, Kim, Kes, and Paris and some ships in the bridge station. So I have to change it out to something else.
Hey, speaking of that, did you see the Voyager little reunion Zoom
chat?
Yeah,
with the cast?
Yeah.
I did not. I talked to, of course, Nerd Party alum, Charlene Schmidt. She said she had watched it, and she said it was great, just too short. Mm. Said that they were just getting their vibe, but because, I guess they sort of separated the cast and sort of like A and B.
Yeah, I've seen them do other stuff before, and basically they have a limit on how many channels they can bring in to the stream at once. So they're all there, but it's just like whether you're live or not. And they keep rotating through people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I watched it. It was really fun.
So it's a good group to get together. So I admit I am continuing my original series. Rewatch. I did knock out two episodes this weekend. So that was good. What about y'all? Watching any Star Trek or any other just stuff?
Oh, I watched Star Trek because I had to.
Yes, we all had homework this week. All right, well, let's just get into it. You know, we talked last week about the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and Star Trek, which, of course, go together like apples and oranges. But, about TOS and sort of how we go back to that. And I thought about, I always like to kind of relate who did it better. There's obviously stories that kind of repeat themselves, throughout the franchise. Not that it's always a bad thing. It's always interesting how every franchise plays with a certain story. But there's actually a character that keeps popping up in the franchise. And, I'm not saying he's the most interesting character, but he still keeps popping up. And that is Harcourt.
Q. Oh, sorry.
Yes. Harcourt Fenton Mudd. Harry Mudd. So he has appeared in several franchises of Star Trek, originally starting, of course, in the original series, and then continuing life in the animated series, and then going on to Discovery, Star Trek Discovery.
And Short Treks.
And Short Treks as well. So we're going to, I think we all picked all of them. I think we're going to cover them all here, here on City Alpha 3. So I guess I always want to say no particular order, but that's a lie. I'm going to go in order. So his first appearance was in a little episode called Mudd's Women. And who covered Mudd's Women?
Wait, that was me, right? That was me.
Yeah, it wasn't me. That's why I was shaking my head.
I'm like, wait a minute, that was the first episode. Yeah, I did Mudd's Women, and I got to...
Just the name, like, it's so 70s. It's like, what do we call it? Let's call it Mudd's Women.
It's
That's
really
not
weird.
Demeaning at all.
It's no Mudd's Passion, which we'll get to.
Mudd's the Passion of Mudd. Oh my god, that's too funny. It's weird because so I was just talking about Philip about this before the show, and it's episode 6, I want to say, 5 or 6. And so yep. Mudd shows up real early on. Uhura's wearing the wrong color, and Spock is all smiley and happy and giggly. And it's bad. It's bad. Looking back on it, in terms of like,
you could say it's bad, Daniel. Failure. It's okay for
it's
you
a
to
really
say that.
Weird, like even if you like grant it like a big grain of salt because of just different. Topics.
Even if you say sexism is okay,
right? It's weird. It's like a weird mixed message about these women who they're taking these pills to be pretty, but then Kirk gives the women a placebo, and they are still pretty. All they needed was self-confidence all along. Jeez. But they only needed to be pretty wives for the miners. It's a really, let's say, outdated episode of Star Trek. But it does introduce Harry Mudd, and for that, I guess we could be thankful? Question mark?
I don't know. Well, that'll be our I guess we'll conclude that answer at the end of this episode. Though I think we're going to keep it focused on Mudd, I suppose. But one thing, Daniel, I do remember in that episode, having watched it in my TOS rewatch, is that, and I can't remember almost anyone's name, but the main lady of Mudd's women, like, it's interesting because she's actually, you know, I mean, they're basically, I mean, I don't want to use the wrong word here, but male order brides, we'll say that, right? Mm-hmm. So they're male order brides. And so you think, like, oh, well, you know, not a lot there. But she's, like, treating the guy like he's an idiot, because he is. He's like, why don't you put your dirty pans outside so the sandstorm will clean him? He's like, well, I was gonna get to that. I just hadn't thought of that. She's like, well, you know, and she's like, why don't you do this? And he's like, oh, okay. So, I mean, like, she's not a stupid girl or woman by any means.
Talking about it being an early Star Trek episode, they're on that planet, and the miners are there digging for lithium crystals. They haven't decided that they were dilithium yet. They were
haven't discovered it yet. Lithium.
You know what, guys? We need to make this space crystal a little more spacey.
It's really interesting.
How do we do that?
So Mudd comes on the ship, and he's not Mudd. He doesn't introduce himself as Mudd. He introduces himself as whatever his fake name is. And they sort it out pretty quickly that he's lying. And they sit him down in front of the computer in the conference room. And, you know, they're like, okay, we just need to do that. This is the lie detector. What's your name? And he just fails the lie detector like 10 times in a row. And he just... It's really funny. I'm like, that device would be really useful, I think, in a lot of Star Trek, if they could just instantly tell who was lying. But, you know, Harry Mudd, he's, I guess, supposed to be a fun, lovable rogue in his first appearance. Roguish type, like,
Rogue
anti-hero?
One?
Not even anti-hero. I don't know. What would you call him? I don't know. He's just foil. Foil?
Yeah.
But he's like, I'm going to take foil. Over your ship, Captain Kirk. And you're like, no, you're not. Like, there's no possible way you're going to do that.
Yeah, is he more dangerous or comic relief or both?
Just, yeah. He's like a danger to himself.
Because, I mean, Daniel, was he a threat in that episode really ever, do you think?
He outwits.
Like, was he in actual danger?
The danger comes from the crystals. They're like about to lose all their power, and Mudd is holding the women as leverage over the miners so that the miners don't give the crystals to the Enterprise. The Enterprise, like, by the end of the episode, it's very dire. They have like 45 minutes left of power. I'm like, there's no way you're gonna. There's no way this
45 of your Earth minutes, spaceman.
So it's really more of about like a wheeling and dealing type situation. But he's not like a existential threat, and he's not like a danger, but he's more of an annoyance, I think. And that's probably where he falls into, I imagine.
It's interesting with Mudd, because, like, I don't like the character of Mudd. I think he's really just... But I like the character of Cyrano Jones. I think Cyrano, which I feel is kind of similar, except for Cyrano Jones is funny, and, like, he's just like a lovable... You know, just he's a you know I don't know I just like the way they did that character better than the way they did
mostly
Mudd.
Harmless.
He's mostly harmless. You know, he's out to make a buck, but he's not malicious intent at all. Whereas Mudd is like, I'll screw you over just to make a buck. You know.
Yeah, is it Daniel? Do you think like that he's just a mental threat? Like, you know, like I'm trying to think of the TOS villains, which there are a lot of. I mean, you say Khan, but just because they have the movie, you know, it's just Space Siege was one episode, but it's just Khan, who's also a physical threat. Like, he's going to have the fight scene with Kirk. Mudd's not going to have a fight scene. he's sort of the mental, you know, strategic, the conniver, right?
Yeah, he's
right.
A con man.
The Quark. He's a Quark. Right?
Yeah, he's a Quark. That's an insult to Quark, but sure, we'll go with it.
Yeah, he's a con man. He's not even, like, even I wouldn't even call it maybe outsmarting. I think that might be giving the character too much credit. Like, more like outfoxing. Mm-hmm.
In a perfect situation and circumstances, he's able to get the upper hand.
Yeah.
But any time outside of that circumstance, he's just nothing.
Yeah.
But do you find... Yeah, do you find that he's successful? In other words, like, is he as smart as he thinks he is, or is he just, like, terrible? Like, is he a more Rom or a Quark? I don't know if Quark ever really succeeds, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But Quark is good at getting out of it. And I think right. I would argue that probably Harry Mudd is, too, because he comes back all the time. After doing these heinous things, by the way, not just, like, you know, he gets out of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would argue... He does get the upper hand pretty frequently. Obviously, by the end of the episode, that's not going to be the case. But more so than you would think of a bumbling fool. He's not, like, you know, falling into the situation. He's actively trying to manipulate it. And a lot of times it seems maybe he's just lucky. I don't know.
And then one last thing, because, I'm predicting as we get to the end, especially when we get to Discovery. But in TOS's, you know, his first appearance, like, is there an underlying... Like, is he amoral or immoral? In other words, and I'm not trying to be philosophical, but, like, how dangerous is he in his first appearance? Because, you know, he gets kind of dangerous when we get near Discovery time.
It's really...
You know, about... He'll kill a person.
It's interesting,
you
know? Because his mission is ultimately... Like, and the episode goes out of its way to point this out, but these women want his services. They want... They're absolutely, like, looking to him to go find them husbands, for them to go, you know, and of course he's going to benefit from that. But he's not – his intentions certainly aren't evil or harmful. I think he's just trying to get the best deal situation that he can. But then he gets found out. But even then, he's not trying to manipulate the women. He's not trying to take advantage of them. At least that's how it's presented. Like that lead lady, I can't remember her name either now, and I watched it last night. She goes this whole thing about, you know, this is what we want. We want to go to these places when they're in the courtroom with Kirk and stuff. And this, so I don't know. I guess I would consider him amoral instead of immoral. I think his goal is personal enrichment, but I don't think he's necessarily trying to step all over everybody else. It's just, if it happens, it's what happens.
So he's more small businessman than human trafficker.
Maybe something in between.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, let me know anything else you got. So, who did? And I know this will be hard to figure out because they were very silent about the fact that they had to do it. Who watched I, Mud?
I
feel like that's staring.
I did. You know, I thought it was going to be Apple product related. It was not. It was not at all. This is where, hey, you know that lovable rogue we saw? Let's see him again in season 3. And
you fans demanded it.
Really? I mean, was this a buy clause in the season 3 renewal that somehow we had to pay up? I don't know. So they end up on a planet and... It's a planet with all the androids, so it's just like Star Trek Picard, but they're all played by twins. Maybe it's kind of hard to tell if they're actually twins or if they're just wearing the same wig. They use a couple photo techniques to duplicate the androids, but basically Mudd has been trapped on this planet and all the androids are listening to him for some reason. But he actually does what he promised to do in the first episode. He takes over the Enterprise. I mean, we don't see him take over the Enterprise. We're told, but that all the androids beam up and replace or bring all the crew down. And yeah, but basically they're able to, through wacky hijinks, confuse the androids enough with illogical things, be it dance statements. Yeah, and through all of that, they're able to overload the androids, and the androids basically decide not to conquer the galaxy and help the humans, but they're still there with Mudd, and Mudd's ex-wife android is reactivated to harp on him some more. All of this after we learn... the best scene in the whole episode, though, is when Mudd is trying to explain what he's been up to in the in-between time. And every line he says, Kirk immediately zings it with, like, a truth. You know, he's like, acquired some technology. You stole it. And he's like, and then I borrowed a ship. And he's like, and you stole that. And he's like, and then I, you know, went over here. And that was that verbal jab back and forth was actually pretty enjoyable between him and Kirk. I mean, basically, it comes down to he's violating patent law. I mean, really exciting stuff, guys. I mean, this is peak Star Trek. He's not paying the proper patents to the Vulcans, I guess. I don't know.
It's no Trade Federation blockade of Star Wars, you know.
Oh man, it's, you know. So yeah, again, best episode in Trek, not by a long shot, but some good scenes. Again, the verbal sparring is fun. It's wacky, guys. I mean, it's like you have Uhura desperate to retain her youth and become an android, because apparently they have technology to just plop your brain into an android. I get a feeling the Picard writers watched this episode before plotting out Picard. Just maybe. Yeah, it's... I mean, we played fast and loose with androids back in TOS. We all know that, you know. And then in Picard's time, we act like Data is it. It's like, well... But anyway, so yeah, that's my synopsis of iMUD. No
doesn't,
Apple products
doesn't the
intended.
Ending, if memory serves me, isn't the ending his ex-wife shows up and nags him? Like,
so he built the ex-wife and programmed her so that as soon as he activated her, she has her own little alcove, and as soon as he activates her, she starts harping on him, and he just says, you know, shut up, Stella, and then she deactivates at that command. So they reactivate her, but they don't include that subroutine, so he can't turn her off, and all of the androids have numbers on a necklace they're wearing, so you can tell like how many there are. And so he sees like Stella 1 and Stella 2, and then Stella 500 comes around the corner, and he just starts to get pale. And everyone laughs, freeze frame, smile, and we wrap up the episode. It's literally the very end.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think later on, Darren, you and I are going to have to compare notes about Stella, but that'll come back up.
I mean, there is good use in this episode of like cut screen, you know, to duplicate the actors for the androids, you know, which is a pretty good technique. But that and the verbal sparring in that one scene with Kirk is pretty much it for high notes.
So to go back to the character of Mud, so it's obviously the sequel here. Would you say again, Darren, that he's dangerous, comic relief, or both?
Again, like I said, in a unique circumstance that's totally stacked in his favor, he's dangerous. In any other situation, he's not. Like literally the only reason that because they beam down to this planet of full of androids that he controls, he was able to take over the Enterprise. That was the requirement for him to succeed. So I don't think he's dangerous at all. I think, you know, it's, you know, maybe, and then it's probably going to take another 3 space years for him to create that perfect storm to take over again. Yeah, his ultimate goal, again, like, that's why I like Cyrano Jones better. Like, even though he's not, you know, Cyrano's not malicious, but he has a goal. You know, his goal is to sell you stuff and to make money and to, you know, be a merchant. And it's just way clearer. I don't know what to make of Mud. It's like, is his goal to just do what he wants? And, you know, I don't know.
Oh, okay. So I had the... And again, I don't know, what do you call the animated series, but, you know, his third appearance or...
Yeah, third encounter with the Enterprise.
Yeah, so I had Mud's Passion.
Oh, geez, these titles stink, guys. They're not good at all.
I don't know, they didn't even play with Mud, like My Name Is, or...
I don't know, it's because I never understood why he's named Mud. Like, is it some inside joke I'm supposed to get? Because I don't get it.
That's just his name, you know?
It's not a good name. It's a bad name. Anyway.
So in Mud's Passion, they sort of, what you were talking about, Darren, where they sort of explain away how he escaped, you know, the backstory. You know,
like, somehow it happened.
I acquired, and Kirk's like, stole. And then he's like, oh, and I did this. And yeah, you swindled. So anyway, but the way the episode starts is the Enterprise just beams down to a planet called Motherlode. That seems like a terrible name for a planet. But anyway, and...
Pre-cloud! Sorry, Mud, what? What did I...
Yeah,
did I sneeze?
Motherlode. Yes, yeah. So
named by the same species as FreeCloud, I bet. Yeah. Anyway.
Yes, but Harry's basically doing a snake oil salesman bit for miners because that's his shtick, apparently, is miners, and apparently he's still going on the whole love angle because he has some love crystals.
Could they be the miners? No, yeah, yeah. It's like 5-6 years old.
Yeah, so if you like smash the crystals on your skin, and then you touch a person of the opposite sex, they make that very clear, opposite sex. Which again, now that I think about it, because there were not a lot of humans, they were like half humans, half like kind of.
Got to make simian. It really clear: these are not gay love crystals. They cannot work that way in 1970,
whatever. Yeah. But I just like, I have to assume like not every alien species has opposites. But anyway, well, I'll go in a whole tangent there. But anyway. And so he's selling these crystals, and he brings on, like a magician, like, here's my assistant who is in love with me, who's clearly voiced by Majel Barrett. And, you know, she's like, oh, Harry, I just want to be with you. And then Spock's like, she's a fake! And he phasers her.
Oh, my
and it's
gosh.
Like, oh, that's a... It was like a chameleon lizard. Like, it's like the woman turns into a lizard.
Oh, my
like,
gosh.
And then walks away. He's like, that's a fake! You're a fake! And then,
it's
you know,
a fake!
And so they take Mud into custody because basically they're like, you know, there's no law there on that planet. It's like, well, Mud, you can either, you know, have the mob kill you or you can surrender yourself to us. He's like, I surrender. So they go to the Enterprise. And so now Mud's on the Enterprise. He tricks Nurse Chapel. He sort of decides that's going to be his dupe. And so like, oh, but you'd like some crystals to make that Spock fellow fall in love with you. And so... From there, she eventually swindles her, and after that, he steals her access card, which we all know they have on TOS. It's an access card.
Oh, yeah. Episode, they all right? have access yeah. cards. Yeah.
Puts Nurse Chapel on it, and steals her access card, puts it in the shuttle bay, and tries to steal a shuttle. When Chapel confronts him, some of the crystals get into the ship's ventilation.
So, of course they do.
Hijinks. And so, but he steals the shuttle with Chapel, goes into the planet... Hijinks ensue on the Enterprise with opposite sex people falling in love, of course, and because the same sex, you just have deep friendship. So that's
so it's a
some weird lines.
It's a love / bro potion.
Like... Yes, love bro potion.
Jeez.
Number 9. So yeah, so when they go on the planet, it's sort of if folks haven't watched TOS before, and I know Darren's the expert here, but if people haven't watched TAS, when you're on a planet, you're always going to see a monster. Like, every time. It's
pretty
like
much. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. There's always a big... They all look different. Don't get me wrong. They're all different monsters. But there's a big monster on every planet. And so,
because we can.
A big monster. Yes. So there's a big monster that's chasing him. And eventually, long story short, they end up throwing the crystals in one of the monster's mouths. And Harry's like, no, those are my only two left. And so they beam him back up. And Harry ends up giving a full confession and... It goes from there. But I think the funny thing about the crystals is that, because Harry actually is surprised that they actually do work, because he didn't really know that they did. But there's like a hate hangover. So like after you take them,
like a breakup.
You then like hate the person for 2 hours or something. Because like, yeah, you know, Nurse Chapel's like, oh, Spock, last person I want to see, you know. Because anyway, but yeah. So, but yeah, so basically he's just flim flam man in this episode. But he's a con artist, you know. He cons Nurse Chapel, not to make her like she's stupid or anything. No, she's a good character, but he kind of plays on her because she's kind of like, you know, I don't trust him, but maybe we'll see. Maybe I'll experiment on these crystals, and he's like, no, don't experiment. You know, just give him a try, and kind of goes from there. So yeah, that's flim flam Harry Mudd.
Flim flam.
So yeah, he doesn't really try to take her. Yeah, he doesn't really have to take over the ship. He's just trying to escape. He just steals a shuttlecraft.
Is there any reference to how he got out of his iMud situation?
I stole a ship that came along.
Yeah, I'm reading. It's like he stole a ship, traveled to a planet, sold Starfleet Academy to them.
Yeah, that was funny. Yep.
Kind of like those people that
I
sell
have a bridge
bridges.
In San Francisco.
Yeah, I was going to say San Francisco Bridge.
So, yeah. All right. Well. After that, obviously, memorable appearance, we kind of jump a lot. So, we then go into the prequel. Now, we can argue about this. How consistent is this character? Whatever. So, we then go to Choose Your Pain from Star Trek Discovery, which I also had. So this is the introduction slash reintroduction of Harry Mudd. But of course, this is young Harry Mudd. Of course, you know, he was voiced by the same actor in the animated series as he was in the original series. But of course, with Discovery, he's been a recasting of a certain comic character from The Office. So Choose Your Pain. So this episode is like 50% about other stuff. Just to remind you all, this is they have the tardigrade on the Discovery, and they've been using it successfully. But Lorca has been told by Admiral that, you know, we're you know, too good of an asset. We stop using it. You know, we want to study this so other ships can use it. And Lorca's obviously not happy. So when he's coming back from this conference, that's when he gets attacked by the Klingons and captured. And then Captain or Saru takes over as acting captain, and then Michael's having these worries about the tardigrade being abused. And she shares this with Saru, who's not having it. And then she goes with Culbert, Dr. Culbert, and he's like, okay, I think you're right. And then they go to Stamets, who's obviously a little hard to convince. But obviously Saru's worried about rescuing Lorca. But then there's this thing about, well, we shouldn't use the tardigrade. This is when he does the whole, like, create a profile of all the good captains and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, long story short, so Lorca, when he gets into his cell, who does he meet but Harry Mudd?
Of course.
And so, yes, yes. Now, this is very interesting because you said comparing Stella notes. So we get a little bit of the story here. This is Harry's version. Harry's version is that, you know, why are you in a Klingon cell? Gabriel asked him. He's like, well, I fell in love with Stella. And, you know, I had to impress her dad. So I had to borrow all this money. And I ended up buying her a moon for my lovely Stella. But then had problem paying the money back. One thing led to another, got into trouble, and then that's how he ended up where he is. So he's just love struck. That's all he is. Just a guy that fell in love.
That's it.
But I think the sort of where we start, you know, playing with the character's danger a little bit. Because in the Choose Your Pain, which is the Talios episode, if everyone remembers, the Klingons will come in and pick a prisoner and say, choose your pain, and you can basically pick who you want to get beat the crap out of. And so Harry, you know, points at, like, the beat-up Starfleet officer who gets his brains bashed in, because this is Discovery, of course. And, you know, and so that's Harry's thing, because Gabriel's like, I happen to notice that you don't have any marks on you. And he's like, it's because I'm a survivor, Captain. But then Harry knows Lorca's backstory, and that's the mysterious part about that. Long story short, we're introduced to a certain Lieutenant Ash Tyler for the first time. And who's also in that cell as well. And Harry eventually, later in the episode, explains to Lieutenant Tyler, oh, this is Captain Lorca. He's the one who, you know, his ship got attacked, but he's the only one who escaped and left all his, you know, ship
with the
destroyed.
Baran.
So, yeah, he didn't want to go down with his ship. And Lorca's like, that's not entirely the story. What it is I destroyed my ship, you know, because I didn't want them to be taken by the Klingons. And so you sort of kind of get all that stuff. But then you also have Harry has this little pet, you know, his little cockroach spider, yeah, whatever it is, that apparently also Harry's been listening in for the Klingons, because there's a little listening device on the animal. And so Lorca has been drip-dropping information. So when he gets interrogated by Moress, he knows someone's been listening in, and that's he suspects Harry. And so long story short, at the end, you know, they get to choose your pain. Because they're like, oh, you know, Harry, we're going to make sure you get your, you choose you. And Klingon comes in, and Ash is like, no, Captain, choose me. And you're like, oh, they're so Starfleet. And so Ash gets beat up a little bit. But then they both, Lorca and Ash, both attack the Klingons. And Ash is like, yeah, this was always a two-person rescue. I just needed a second person that I actually wanted to escape with. And Harry's like, no, take me and my Stella. And Lorca punches him in the face and says, nah, you're staying here, buddy. And that's when Mudd does this sort of, you know, Inspector Gadget.
I'll get you next time.
I'll get you. This isn't the first time you've heard from Harry Farcourt Mudd. I think that the one thing, and I know.
I mean, they add a lot of dimension to the character.
They do. Especially with the Stella story. Because, I mean, we know he's lying. But do you know he's lying when you watch this episode? I don't know. But that's his version that he tells. You know,
right. His romanticized version.
Yes. But I also think, and this is the thing I personally found annoying, but I know it resonated with some audience members, so as always, your mileage may vary. He does this whole, like, oh, you Starfleet people, you know, and Ash, it's like, no, we're out there exploring. It's like, yeah, but you don't think about the little guys, you know. There's more of us than there are of you. And when you're doing your where no man has gone before and you're not thinking about who gets caught in your crossfire. And I'm like, I can see where some people will buy that, but I'm just like, what you're saying is then that there should be no progress.
Right.
You know? I mean, yes, there's always a cost.
Granted, Starfleet started the war. His statement is good because it's a manipulative statement because parts of it are true, but it's underlying whole premise is false.
Well, then it's an interesting situation too, because then you ask whose side is Harry Mudd on there? Because like you say, he's eavesdropping for the Klingons, but I don't there's no love between him and the Klingons. It is like what he was talking about. He's a survivalist, and he looks out for himself first and foremost. He has issues with both the Klingons and Starfleet people. It's just, it's a little more dimensionality. I won't go to say that it's really that great, but it's something at least to add to the character.
Yeah, because, I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, because, I mean, I think it's amoral or even just, you know, he's out for himself. Because, I mean, this whole, because there presumes a staticness. In other words, oh, if Starfleet didn't do anything, everything would be fine. Well, how do you know the Klingons wouldn't have encroached? How do you know there wasn't some other, you know... It's not just because if one person doesn't do anything, everything else remains the same. Well, if one person doesn't do anything, other people do different things. And so I just feel like it's a very short-sighted statement. But anyway, it's also just like, I also think it'd be interesting to get a little more backstory of why he's such a survivalist. I mean, because, you know, throughout all of this, we can just say like, well, that's just his personality. But like, maybe he did have some rough childhood where he had to scrape for everything. And then you could understand that. Or maybe it's some reverse situation. Maybe he grew up rich and then something was taken away. I don't know. But just that, he's just con man. Full stop. I don't know. It'd be interesting maybe to create a backstory. Not that you need one, but I'm just saying, if you want to. They're just introducing a little more violence to this Harry Mudd than there has been in the TOS and cartoon of he doesn't mind if the Klingons bash some guy's head in as long as it's not him. Next we go to his second Discovery appearance. With magic man, blah, 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 blah. Who had that?
Magic to make the sanest man go mad.
All right.
And unlike your episode, Philip, this is he's not just a player in this set piece. He's the focus. And yes. this is where he goes, I would argue, I don't know, it depends on how you want to count it. But he gets much more violent. And this is the... By the way, this is fun fact.
The Groundhog's Day episode.
This is the Groundhog's Day episode. Rewatching it was really interesting because I hadn't thought about Discovery Season 1 in a long time. There's plenty of callbacks, lots of callbacks to your episode, Philip, all the time. They even specifically ask him about loving Stella and stuff. We meet Stella, so we'll get into that. And this is also the party episode from Star Trek Discovery Season 1, which I had forgotten about.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. That's the part that.
That's right, because the kiss and stuff like that.
That's the part that starts the Groundhog Day dance. And then it's like, oh man, I forgot they were like trying to make.
Because Stamets is the one that lives through, yep. Right?
He's the one that is like aware that there's multiple loops going through. So, yeah. Because he says he exists outside of regular space time.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, so Harry Mudd is very upset at the episode prior and. Literally is out for revenge, mostly. I mean, he's still out to make a dollar. He wants to sell Discovery the ship because he knows he can make a lot of money. But since he has this magic time loop whale, he wants to... he just kills people every time. He learns every time. He gets better every time. And we get to see that process, which is actually kind of fun. That process is kind of cool. Like... Oh, you know, this random crew member stopped me in the hallway this time. I'll hold back for 3 seconds. He'll walk past. I'll go in and I'll be fine. And like that process is actually kind of fun. But Yeah, he gets to murder Lorca. He tells Lorca he's murdered him like 48 times or something like that. And he kills a whole bunch of people. He kills Ash. But I don't know, does it count a killing if you're resetting time? Does that count? I don't know. But anyways,
only a time cop can solve that.
So he goes through all this process, and of course Stamets over time has to convince Michael, and Michael has to convince Ash, and they all have to convince each other to help each other out, and they stop him, which is nice. They stop him by disabling the captain's chair functions because they are not counted as critical systems, and so they outwit him because Harry has disabled all critical systems, but that doesn't count for some reason. You would think that would count because there's like a self-destruct button and stuff on that, but okay, well, that's fine. We'll go with that. And he thinks he's signaling the Klingons to sell them Discovery and Michael. But in fact, he calls Stella and her father to show up. And there's an interesting exchange, and this is why I said I wanted to compare notes. Because Stella is very much in love with Harry, and her father is very willing to forgive him, and that's it. The end of the episode, they say, Starfleet is not concerned, just leave him out of our hair, make sure he doesn't come back, no big thing. And he goes off with his girlfriend, he isn't married yet, girlfriend, fiancé, and his...
But you get the feeling he doesn't want to be there. Like,
ish.
Shotgun wedding-ish.
Ish, but not like...
Sorry, shotgun phaser wedding-ish.
You would think he wouldn't have a problem being there because her father is a lot of money. And I don't know. Like, they mentioned, it's so funny because Ash was talking to him. And he's like, oh, man, remember how much you were talking... Like, what about Stella? How much you love Stella? And he goes, oh, yeah, right, Stella, the love of my life. And like, you know, and that whole thing. But then when she shows up, he's like, okay, whatever, I'll just go with him. It doesn't seem too bad.
Well, at that point, it's that or Federation Justice,
right?
Which is not looking very good.
But she's not, like, she's, like, really sweet, and, like, she's like, I know who you are. I know you're a shyster. I know you're a con man, and I love you anyways. Like, there's no...
That's true. It's not like she's not like the TOS Stella yeah. at all.
So I don't understand. Younger. There's, like, it doesn't... Yes, that's fair. But it doesn't appear that it's, like, a... harmful relationship. It seems to be very friendly and nice and good for Harry Mudd. I don't know why he wants to avoid it.
Well, a few things. Daniel, did they explain how he got off the Klingon cell prison?
Oh, they might have quickly. I don't remember specifically, no. Mm-hmm.
And then I'm wondering, so assuming we're trying to tie this all together, maybe it doesn't tie together, but I guess the curious thing, Darren, with your episode of I, Mudd, we're sort of taking it as read that that's actually what Stella is like versus Mudd's version of Stella. Because Harry tells a lot of stories. How many does he actually believe that he tells so much?
So because the Stella android is a recreation of Stella, it's like all the things he doesn't like about her in his mind, but it's not an actual person. It's not actually reflecting a real person.
Like, I mean, for instance, like, you could see the real Stella, and maybe she just, every now and then, be like, oh, Harry, you know, I wish you wouldn't do that. And in his mind, he's like, Harry! You know, and it's just like...
Right. Well, and to answer your question, Philip, Rainn Wilson offered a theory as to how Mudd escaped from the Klingons.
Was it Stuart the cockroach?
He said he has no great value to the Klingons, and through camera surveillance, they realized he was pretty crafty, after which they let him free if he went after Lorca and even gave him the Gorgomander. I guess that's the space whale
it was.
Timey whale.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, I mean, so yeah, no canon answer to your question. Sorry.
No, it's... I know. It's always just the villain. Like, how'd you escape? You know, like... How did Dracula survive?
But that
survive?
Kind of goes with Harry Mudd, because all of his episodes start like that, where it's like, how did you get off that planet that we stranded you on, Mudd? He's like, well, I did this and this and this, and it's like, but you don't believe any of it, so you really have no way of knowing.
But, I mean, was, you know, magic to make is always, in the Discovery world, so like, the only, and I'm exaggerating, I may be wrong, sort of like the only standalone episode, even though obviously there's episodic, or there's obviously serialization elements to it.
Well, yeah, but it draws on the choose your pain.
Is it comic? Again, is it comic, dangerous, both?
It's Star Trek-y. I mean, it definitely has a lot of those elements.
You get a sense of, like, somebody in the writer's room watched Cause and Effect, and they said, I want to do that thing. And then
and Groundhog's Day, and we have to add a romantic subplot, and, oh, Stamets. Stamets could be the, I mean, you could feel them writing it. Yeah. Like, you can feel that.
Well, it's one of the few, and again, this is going to sound backhanded, it's one of the few funnier Discovery episodes, right?
That's true.
Yeah, it's much lighter than most of the regular episodes, I would argue, yeah. And because of the episodic nature of the episode. Because, like, they referenced the Klingon War, which I was like, oh yeah, that's a thing that happened. And and then, but that's it. Like, it's not consequential or anything like that, so you can just watch the episode.
And then, but then I guess the end result is that he's trying to sell the Discovery to the Klingons, which is basically a way of killing all the people, right? Or, I mean, like, how does he explain all this away morally? Or
he says he knows that the ship has a secret. He knows Lorca, there's some sort of something special on the ship. Over the course of his time jumping, he discovers it's the jump drive, the spore drive. And he just wants to sell it, really. That's what he said. He says, I'll make a fortune. I don't think he has really a concern for the crew. But then in the process of outwitting him, Michael comes to him and says, oh, I'm much more valuable than the Discovery because I'm the one that killed T'Kuvma. And then he's like, oh, I'm going to make double the money. It's going to be awesome. And that was his downfall, I guess. So
I always wonder, like, what does he want? Like, I mean, money is always the answer, right? But, like, does he just want to retire on a beach planet somewhere? Or, like,
maybe he has a cousin who has a moon and he's really jealous of that.
You know, like, what does he really... Anyway. And then, Daniel, because you're asking, does it count? And I don't know the answer, you know, because he's sort of killing these people. But is it because he knows that it's going to reset? So, like, in what he thinks is the final time version... Does he kill anyone, or does he seem to care if he does?
No, I don't think he... Yeah, he doesn't care, I guess. You're right, he doesn't care, because he does... In the final loop, remember, it was Michael that ate she ate that, like, black hole pill? And that's what caused the time to reloop. At that point, he had won, essentially. But then she convinced him, I'm really worth a lot of money... I really want Ash back, so I'm going to eat this black hole pill. I'll die. You'll have to reset.
You'll have to reset. That's true.
Yeah, I guess he doesn't have a problem with it.
Well, let's go ahead, before we come to any conclusions, last installment, The Escape Artist. Your short trek.
And I'm trying to remember, was this the first short trek we got? I can't remember, actually, the order. I just popped it in, but...
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, but it was
because the first one was Tilly.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So, yeah, this was fun. You know, you have all the androids and all the copies, and, you know, again, it's a short trek. You can feel like, oh, we got this one actor and maybe two and this and one location, and we'll just make a whole story about it, you know. But, yeah, I think the android duplicates part is really funny, and everyone's trying to collect on the bounty. Yeah, it's a fun episode. I feel this is... I mean, you were talking about magic to make the Saints Man. Like, is that a funny episode? Like, this is a funny episode. Like, nothing bad happens to anybody. It's just Mud being, wah, wah, wah. You know, hey, it's Mud. Oh, that lovable rogue, you know. Maybe we'll see him in season 3. I don't know. But, yeah, that's it. I mean, there's not much to say. It's not a whole episode. It's just a short trek. But
Darren?
Yeah.
The twist at the end. What is it?
It's that the android. What is it? I'm trying to remember.
Because the main character is like the bounty hunter, right?
Right. That we never see. And then at the end, it's revealed that it's Mary Mud is the bounty hunter. Like, we thought it was like a female bounty hunter in a suit, and it actually is Harry Mud. That turned in all of his duplicates to collect the money.
Right.
So is he the real Harry Mudd? Yeah, that's the twist at the end, which is very clever.
There was a Tellarite. But, like, that's the one who had custody of Harry Mudd was a Tellarite, right?
Yeah, there's a Tellarite involved, yeah.
Because I was trying to think, wasn't it, at the end, sort of the in-jokes of all the Harry Mudd, like Harry's wearing all of his costumes that we've seen him in throughout all of...
Almost like Star Trek Picard saw this episode before making their pilot. No, just kidding.
And I guess, and again, it's a short trek. I'm not going to go over the cliff about it. But some of those costumes haven't happened yet. I mean, like, because I feel like he's wearing, like, the one from TAS, which apparently is, like, 15 years in the future from
true.
This episode.
Yeah. But yeah, the very... he has something with the tassels on the shoulder, which is kind of his thing in the original series. So, I mean, you can see what they're going for.
And then, how did the android copies... Like, do you feel like they're jumping iMud, or...
Yeah, they kind of are. I mean, because they're just going full caricature of TOS Mud is really what this episode is about. But it's fun. Again, it's simple. And then the Discovery Mud gets the last laugh at the end with the twist.
It's a good thing the Romulans didn't know about all of Mud's androids that he had just running around.
Yeah, it's true. They would be really upset about that.
Not with the novelization, with all the Mud, with all the androids, with everything else, all the sense that we've ever seen.
And again, like, there's something about Mud and androids, like, you know, that happened in iMud. So, which I'm guessing, is that supposed to be like iRobot? Is that
I
what?
Think it's by Claudius.
Mm. Oh. Okay.
So, sort of like him being the king or whatever, you know, the ruler, the emperor.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, again,
Mud the First. I Mud.
Mud the First.
So do we? And again, I'm not saying it's the most important character in the world, but do we feel like it's the same character? Because obviously, the Discovery is the prequel, and the TOSTS is sort of the older Mud.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, definitely, Rian Wilson's portrayal plays him as smarter. Like, he has better plans, and actually succeeds more, I would say, but. So I could relate it to him becoming too overconfident later in life, or having a string of bad luck that kind of lands him in the predicaments of TOS. So I could see him as the same character.
What about you, Daniel? Again, I know you're not like 100% invested in this, but just as the concept of the writers playing with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's not like offensive to me, only because Harry Mudd is not a character that most people care about in any significant way. So, like, tweaking him a little bit, making him a little more rough around the edges or interesting earlier on isn't, like, a super offensive idea to me, because who cares? Like, nobody cares about Harry Mudd. Nobody cares. It's not a big deal. And if they want to use him, that's fine. If you want to call back to the stuff that came before, that's fine. And I will admit, of course, I have a soft spot for Rainn Wilson because of my love of The Office. And so it's... And I think he does a good Harry Mudd. Like, again... Not that anybody cares about the character, but, like, you know, he
does the beard well.
He fits the role pretty well, I'd say. But, yeah, it's fine. It's inoffensive to me. It's the least of Discovery's problems is dealing with Harry Mudd. So,
yeah.
I have no problem with it.
And, I mean, and I guess if we're going to be all canon about it, I guess there's also technically a Mudd reference in After Darkness. The shuttle they use is from the Mudd incident.
I was hoping that was going to be brought
that's
up.
Right.
I was going to bring it up if it wasn't. It's actually mentioned specifically in the Star Trek video game that took place between Star Trek and Star Trek Into Darkness. I think you see
your favorite
his
game.
Ship. That's a terrible game, but I think you see his ship maybe in the Budweiser factory cargo bay or something. But it's mentioned that I can't remember. But anyways, yeah. It is mentioned. He's briefly mentioned on screen that could it be in the shuttle, the Mudd shuttle or whatever they called it. Anyways, yeah. Just, that's fun. That's more of a fun nod.
That's when they fire everything at the bad guys. And
I wonder, again, going way too deep into this, I know. I wonder if Harry is, not to get to people's private lives, he's almost asexual. Because, I mean, a lot of these stories have sexualized elements to them. You know, Mudd's passion, Mudd's women.
Yeah.
But, like, he's never... Well, I'm going to say he's not taking advantage of women. He's not taking advantage of women for himself. Like, he may be exploiting women. But not for himself, right? Like, even in I'm Mudd, like, is he creating, like, women androids for himself? Darren and IMUD.
Yeah, it's. I mean, yeah, he because in IMUD he does make the different models to his specifications. They spell that out.
But he makes men and women.
Yeah, they're mostly women though.
Well, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, what's interesting is in the first one, which now I can't remember the title, when he's talking about the women, like when the women come on board with the Enterprise, like all of the men are literally can't even do their jobs. They're just
it's like the Enterprise episode with the Orion.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah, they're Orions. Yeah,
jaws are on the floor. They're all like struck and nobody can even handle themselves. And Mud just gleefully goes about his business the whole time. So maybe you're right. Maybe he is asexual. That'd be an interesting take on the character.
Yeah. I mean, like, not making this a negative aspect of him, but that he's so self-interested that he just, that's not something, he's just, as long as I get me, right. That's all I'm interested in. Me. No one else. Me. You know, I don't need men, women, whatever, just me. So, yeah. All right. Well, you know, like I said, this was just a character that I thought was interesting just because the franchise keeps playing with him.
Yeah, there was enough for a roundabout topic, I think.
Will he show up in Star Trek Strange New World?
That's a good question.
Oh, man, I hope
not. He can't. I don't think... I don't want him to either, but I don't think he could, technically, because Spock is on the show.
Yeah, that's going to stop
him. Yeah, you're right. It's not going to stop him. It's not going to stop him, but...
Maybe Spock is off that episode somewhere else.
On his shuttle.
On his shuttle. Getting it tuned up.
Oh, boy.
All right. Well, final Mud remarks, Darren.
Like the book that Leonard Nimoy wrote, I am not Mud.
All right. Not me. Do not Mud I. And Daniel?
Yeah. Meh.
He exists.
I'm happy that Mud exists only in the fact that I get to see an office actor in Star
That's
Trek
true. I much prefer Rainn Wilson's portrayal to, yeah.
So, Daniel, which The Office actor will return for Star Trek Strange New Worlds? And what enemy foe will they be playing?
Oh, man, I would love to see...
Will Kevin come back as Jones?
No, I want Kevin to come back. Oh, man. Kevin is absolutely a...
A Klingon?
No. Oh, God, those guys... We like make our ship.
Packlet. Oh my gosh! Jeez, that's so wrong, but so funny.
Oh man, we could do a whole show about office recasts.
All right. Well, until next time, Darren. Where can people find your authentic Harry Mudd android build?
Yeah. Yes, they can find them on Twitter, Twitcher, Instagram under username Dr. Sci-Fi. DrSciFi.
And folks, Daniel, if folks want to read your Stella fanfic about the real story behind their love, where can they reach you?
They can find me on Twitter at Stella. No, they can't. At OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word.
And if folks want to buy a Stewart action figure, it's just like Kiesner. It's included with the main action figure. They can find me on Twitter at NC Public Servant. Well, until next week, I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Daniel Brew.
And we're stranded here, stuck in the mud. On City Alpha 3. Come!